The views and opinions expressed in the following paid pre-recorded program are those of the host, callers, and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of this station, its management, or its owners.
Securities offered through Kestra Investment Services, LLC. Kestra IS, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Kestra Advisory Services, LLC. Kestra AS, an affiliate of Kestra IS. Capital Advisory Group, Inc. is not affiliated with Kestra IS or Kestra AS. Neither Kestra IS nor Kestra AS provide legal or tax advice and are not certified public accounting firms.
You work hard for your money. For the next hour, you're going to learn how to keep what's yours. Capital Advisory Group presents Keep What's Yours. Here are Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zufall.
Hello and welcome to Keep What's Yours with Jeff Zufall. I'm Josh Gilbert, sitting here with Jeff Zufall, Senior Tax Strategist and Wealth Advisor with Capital Advisory Group. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
And you can always contact Jeff. He has got a lot of time on his hands now.
Oh, tons of time.
The tax season is over, but he's still dealing with, you know, the late filers, the extensions, the amendments.
Yeah.
So it's never done.
Never it's a dull moment. But no, it all flows, kind of just keeps on going. So.
Yeah, but now he's not working nights and weekends.
Yes.
So if you have any questions regarding a tax return that you have already submitted, or, heaven forbid, we warned you not to do this, you just plumb didn't file them.
Yes.
Call Jeff right now, 636-394-5524. But the beauty about Jeff, and we talked about this a little bit last week, is that, yes, he does taxes. He is the senior tax strategist. He can help you do your taxes every year. He can help you going forward, make sure that your tax liability is at a minimum.
Yes.
Make sure, and the government is on board with this, there are rules that they've set up.
Oh, yeah.
And as long as you follow the rules,
yes,
you can pay, you know, your full amount of taxes,
mm-hmm.
or you can use some of the benefits that they've written into the tax code.
Exactly. And take it to your advantage.
And just use the tax code to pay as little as legally possible.
That you're legally obligated to pay.
Yeah, you can't just not pay.
Yes, don't do that.
That's illegal. But there's ways to pay less than what you're paying now.
Yes.
And if you've never had anyone look at your taxes or offer up some tax-saving benefits or mention the HSA, which is what we're doing, or an FSA, or any of these other tax-beneficial programs, you could be paying more taxes than you have to.
Yes.
I would almost guarantee it.
Pretty much.
I can't guarantee it.
But I would say the bulk of what we see, people come in, either they're missing stuff from previous years, and I say missing deductions that are on tax returns that nobody ever told them about. And again, you don't know what you don't know. So there's three business owners that we talked with last week. Who, once we really sat down and started to crunch the numbers, were missing a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, at the end of the day, fix this year, get them the deductions, and then you go back and look, is it worth, you know, amending previous year's returns? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Just depends upon the situation.
And it's not really up to anyone to come to us and tell us about these things. And I'll use my example, which I always do every week anyway. We do an FSA for my son's schooling, and Jeff told me about it the first week that we ever sat down to do this. And we looked into it, and we're saving tax money. We're keeping about $1,200 to $2,400 bucks a year. That's real money. That's
in your pocket.
That's $2,000.
Yes.
That's left in our pocket, in our bank accounts. We're using it to go on vacation this summer. And otherwise, we would have just been paying it off to the federal government, and Lord knows what they use it
exactly.
for. Exactly. They're not going to Disney with it.
You never know. They might be.
You know what? The head of the IRS is at Disney.
Right? Disney.
Hello.
I'm on Josh's bunny.
Yeah. So if it weren't for talking to Jeff about it, I never would have caught it. And, you know, it's not really my wife's department. What do you call that?
HR.
The HR department.
Yes.
They didn't come to her with this idea.
No.
My HR department didn't come to me with this idea. It's not really their job to do that.
No, they put it out there. They help you implement it. But you have to figure out, I mean, usually most people will sit down with them, figure out what employee, I'll say, benefits that you have, and see if you could use any to your advantage and go from there.
But it was, you know, Jeff, when we were doing a meet and greet, he said, hey, you know, what's your family situation? Oh, we got a little baby, you know, he mm-hmm. goes to daycare. He goes, oh, FSA, you know, and we were off and running. So unless you talk to somebody and unless you let Jeff take a look at your finances, your tax returns, your W-2s.
Exactly.
All that stuff. He can take a look and say, well, you're missing this, this, and that. Plus, you're not having enough withheld, which is why you're probably paying
exactly.
too much taxes at the end of the year anyway. So having Jeff be able to be the senior tax strategist, but also your wealth advisor, that's really handy too, because you could make a financial move and not realize the tax hit.
Exactly. We see that all the time on a regular basis. And then usually they point at us and they say, you messed up my tax return.
Didn't you have some retired woman, sweet old lady come in and she was like got a $4,000 or $5,000 tax hit she wasn't expecting?
Oh, yeah. And literally was mad and like, you messed up my return. And when we looked at it, no, she just took more out of her IRA, but they didn't withhold enough tax when they did that. Nobody told us about it at the end of the, so it is what it is. So mm-hmm. typically by the time we get the return in tax season, it's we're just recording history. So the setup to that is if we were running your money and we were your investment advisor and we were doing your tax return and tax planning at the same time.
When she comes to you and says, I want to take this out of my IRA.
Exactly.
We could tell her.
Oh, hey, you need to withhold 20% for that. You know,
20%
federal or, you know, 2% state, whatever the number may be, to make it work right. And at the end of the year, you know, as long as you're within a couple $100 either way, that's perfect.
And I don't want to point fingers. We're not calling out.
Yeah.
But when she did this with her financial advisor, she could have done all of this with you. But when she did it with her financial advisor, they never told her about this.
Typically what we see is that the advisor will send the withdrawal form for the IRA. And then say, hey, fill it out and send it back to us. And then on there is what's your tax that you want withheld? And they just guess at a number. So really, and I say that honestly, when they guess, they just go, oh, I'm at a 10 or 12% tax bracket and call it a day. Yeah, but in reality, you're not. Because if you add that extra IRA withdrawal to your income, you might jump tax brackets.
And
pay more tax.
What's the most dramatic tax bracket jump?
It actually goes from the 12 to the 24. So I mean, it's at 10%. It's basically doubling if you really want to look at it.
Yeah.
So, and that's where, and the IRS is not slow. They have this mathematically zeroed in, and the 12 to 24 literally is middle America.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know, hey, most people will fall into this category, and they will step right into this on an annual basis.
And then a lot of retired people, they play the game right.
Same with the retired people, yeah.
They played the game right. Their tax rate is low because
exactly.
they're not bringing the money in anymore.
Well, and the IRS is sneaky on this because typically you retire 65, 66, you fire up Social Security, you start taking a little bit of income from your investments, and then boom. It used to be 70 and a half, then it went 72, now it's 73, and soon to be for, I'll say, the younger generation, 75 for required minimum distribution, which is dollars that need to be taken out of your IRA.
They make us take our money out.
Forced. So what takes place is you retire at 66, 65, you get your Medicare, you're good to go health care-wise, you start taking a little money out of your investments, and then a couple years later, boom, they drop the bomb on you.
You're forced to take money
yes.
out, and now you're earning too much.
Too much. You pay a ton of tax. So there's two things that we watch on that. And again, it's a process to say, hey, you may need a 5-year or a 7-year or 10-year jump to fix it. Most people will pack money away in their 401ks and have a ton of assets sitting there. When they retire, they have that safety net to the side. But when they get the RMD age, it's going to force that money out on them. And it's going to force them to pay more tax. But it also, there's a little thing, it makes your Medicare premium payments that you pay, is what's called IRMA. And so it's a funny backwards calculation, which is instead of using adjusted gross income, it's using modified adjusted gross income. So it's taking out your untaxed Social Security and any tax-free income that you receive and adding it back in.
See, and so this is why you need someone helping you out, holding your hand, going through the whole process.
Oh, yeah. And it's a matter of plotting this off.
Who's Irma?
Well, most people don't like her when they meet her.
Yeah.
But it will force your Medicare premiums to go, like today, I think it's $172 a month is the norm. But if your income is a certain, and I don't have the brackets in front of me, but sure. If your income is a notch above that, and it's a dollar above that next bracket, not progressive like taxes, where it says, hey, if you jump from a 12 to a 24, just the dollars over that limit are going to be taxed at 24%. But Irma says $1 over, you double your premiums that you pay on a monthly basis.
Woof.
And it lasts for 12 months or until your income comes back down.
And if someone is listening right now and they realize that they weren't following the rules or again.
It's not really not. It's not.
Who tells us about this?
Nobody. That's nobody. What I mean. It's not really right. Following the rules. You would follow the rules on what you thought was correct.
Right.
And then all of a sudden your RMD shows up and hits your tax return and poof, now you pay more. So you not only pay more tax because you're forced to take the money out of your IRA, but now you got to pay more for your Medicare. And it's delayed by a year. So
if somebody is caught in this trap, and it's... And again, the IRS is not out to get you.
No, but they've plotted stuff to say, hey, if you're sort of successful and you have the cash, you're going to pay more.
Yes. So they're not looking at Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zufall and say, I'm going to get Jeff.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get those guys. No.
They don't even know our names. They just know our Social Security numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're stuck in this trap, you got caught in this loop where you're premiums doubled.
Double or triple in some cases.
Tripled.
Yes.
Can I come to you today and say, Jeff, help me out?
Yes.
And you
to
can
try and work our way out of it. You won't fix it instantly. It'll take you a little
bit
to work out.
But next year, the year after,
exactly.
You'll be set for success.
So one of the examples on this, and it was just they totally blindsided. There was a whole group of, I call them little old ladies, who husbands had worked for the brewery for a gazillion years. They had a ton of Anheuser-Busch stock.
Yeah.
Okay. And guess what? Anheuser-Busch was bought out by InBev,
mm-hmm.
and they forced a sale. So some of these little old ladies literally had $1 million of capital gains.
Oh, it's
gains.
Like an RMD. It's like, well, boom, you've got to sell.
Boom, you were forced to sell. It wasn't optional. So what?
Because you want to be, you want to do it the right way. You don't want to take out $1 million all at once because your
exactly.
tax bill is going to be enormous.
Enormous.
So if you're an older lady, your husband worked at Anheuser-Busch for years, and you're all of a sudden forced to sell $1 million in stock, that's going to be a big tax problem.
It's a big tax problem, but it's also they weren't mad about the taxes. They understood that. They were mad because their Medicare premium went from, I don't know what it was back then, maybe $130
nice.
Bucks a month to $500 and something a
oh
month.
Oh, my gosh.
And it locks in for 12 months.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Yeah, for 12 months, I had to pay the higher premiums. And so they were mad at us. I'm like, I didn't do it.
Right.
I just had to record your sale. And then after 12 months, if you don't have that giant capital gain, you resume back to the norm.
You go back to normal.
And the only out in that is if you have a sale of a business is one of the only outs. So if you sold a business and you generated a giant capital gain, you write a letter saying, hey, I just sold a business. Here's my proof. This doesn't count, and then your Medicare premium stayed the same.
I think, to be fair, the IRS, I could have written a letter saying, hey, InBev made me sell this stock.
They don't care.
Don't ding my Medicare. They don't care.
They don't care. Okay. It just says income, and that's what they're keying off of is income going forward.
I love how these little old ladies, the tax is fine.
Oh, she didn't have a.
It is what it is.
Yep, two of them
didn't
even. But
now my Medicare is tripled.
Bat an eye at the taxes. They're like, okay, that's great. But then about 6 months later, I got yelled at for my Medicare premium. I'm like, that's because you had a $850,000 annual income.
So if you're kind of trapped in this loop yourself personally, Give Jeff a call, 636-394-5524, capitaladvisorygrp.com, Capital Advisory Group. Jeff can help you pull yourself out of it. That one is not something that you can fix tomorrow.
That takes a couple years to work your way into the right scenario.
Otherwise, you'd just be paying triple the price until you fix it.
Until you fix it.
So you might as well fix it today. And going forward, you'll see the benefits come through. And that's for all the taxes. Taxes are not just April 15th, you pay them and say goodbye for a year. Taxes is an ongoing thing.
And, week in, month out.
And, you know, frankly, I'm not going to call Jeff every day, but I'm going to check in with him. I get the benefit of checking in with you once a week.
Exactly.
On the Saturday show here. But I'm going to check in with him quarterly and just say, Jeff, are we still looking good? Is there anything we should change? I want to get to our next segments. May is Small Business Month. We're going to talk all month, probably a little bit.
Small businesses.
About small businesses. I mentioned last week, I said, you know, we've been through tax season. We've been talking about pay your taxes. We've been talking about, you know, pay an estimated payment, tax. We got away from small business.
Jeff is
an expert in small businesses. That's his specialty. So if you have a small business, you're going to want to listen to the next couple segments, and you're going to want to listen all month because we're going to be talking to you. But before we go into break, the Fed. Let's hit some news of the day.
So the news of the day is the Federal Reserve met Wednesday, and they held rates steady, which means they didn't decrease, they didn't increase. They're still data dependent is what they say. So if everybody remembers back, end of, say, fourth quarter of 2023, the Fed made this announcement that they will decrease interest rates maybe three, maybe four times in 24. The problem is this, is each month, so we have January, February, March, soon to be April, but January, February, March, the CPI numbers, which are Consumer Price Index, which is our gauge of inflation, have ticked up just subtly each month, but enough to say that inflation is still out there and still rampant. Again, I'll take the CPI numbers versus going to the grocery store. Those are night and day differences. It's still, and everybody knows inflation is still out there.
Yeah.
The problem is the odds on the Fed lowering rates. I mean, it doesn't look too promising this year. Could happen, but it still doesn't look too promising. And this is what everybody has to realize and absorb this. There is a real good possibility Fed may have to raise rates here shortly in the summer. If the consumer price index keeps ticking up and everything stays the same, the Fed will be their hand will be played to raise rates. Mm. And so Powell kind of hinted at that Wednesday afternoon in his dissertation, because, again, it's not what the Fed does. It's what they say.
Right.
So after they make their announcement, they have a 3-hour press conference, and then there's literally this dissertation. It's a 15-20-page document that they put out. It will bore you to death to read it, but in there is what the concept, the theory today, theory next week, a year from now. They kind of give the hint. So they could possibly raise rates. And I think everybody needs to be prepared for that, just in case they do, because the great expectation was that we would be in a declining interest rate environment this year. Everything would be perfectly fine. Market kicks in and does what it's supposed to do, and everybody's happy, and we go right through the election cycle.
Yeah,
that could change drastically. So not saying it will, but just be prepared for the possibility of that.
And it's just so, I mean, I never took macro, I never took microeconomics. I don't know how it works, but the hotter the economy, and we've got a pretty good economy.
The economy's still racing away, whether you realize it. There's weird, and it's weird because you could look at this laundry list of companies who are closing stores.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the
Express.
Question. Exactly. The question is, are they?
Where am I going to buy my shirts?
Kmart, no.
Yeah.
but again, you get into, I mean, just, I don't know the name, you know, the list, but I remember seeing a list and you know, like CVS closed 300 stores. But again, the question is were they non-profitable stores? Did they put three CVSs on the three corners of the street.
I mean, the CVS boom.
That's what I mean. Walgreens and CVS, there were real estate investment trusts back maybe 10 years ago. That's all they did was created these guys, and they put them on every corner. So the question is, I mean, just realized this the other day, which I didn't think Walgreens closed stores, but they do. There's one at Manchester. I think it's Manchester and Baxter. They closed it. I thought that was it was right there on Manchester Road.
I mean, I've never seen a closed Walgreens, but
ours
to your
one.
Point, it
so
can happen.
Is it a non-performing store? Is it just in a bad location? I mean, those are the questions you don't know. Or is it pure economics at the end of the day? And that's out there for debate because the bulk of the economy still keeps cooking along, mm-hmm. but yet we see these, you know, we haven't seen mass layoffs yet. But you do see the closing of these stores by the hundreds, and you go, So that that's left for a higher pay grade to decipher. But that's what the Fed is actually saying. Their mantra still holds true, higher for longer.
Yeah. And as the economy still trudges along, we get higher interest rates as a result.
Exactly.
To try to cool it down, you listen to Jeff talk on this show. He explains it. I'm a dummy when it comes to finances and numbers, and Jeff's able to explain it to me where I have a working knowledge of it now. I can go home and tell my wife, well, you know the Fed.
Everybody's like, boring, and she walks away.
But where we thought it might go down.
I think everybody was kind of leaning that the Fed was going to decrease rates. That's why we got a little run in the market. Everybody's like, yeah, everything's great. Now they're kind of changing their tune on us. Mm-hmm. And again, we'll have to wait and see what the consumer price index, you know, comes out for April, May, June-ish, midsummer, and be able to take it from there.
Yeah. And I did talk to a mortgage specialist just recently. I'm not moving. I don't have plans on moving, but I was just chatting with him and said, what's the rate at these days? And
Well, that's what a lot of people didn't realize, again, because we went from 2010-ish? 2009, 2010, when after 2008, they had to drop interest rates to zero. Literally, it was free money. And nobody realized it, but I guess you really didn't realize it up until 2021. And they started raising rates again.
Yeah.
So a lot of the SBA notes that are out there that are, you know, huge notes are variable rates. And they've gone from 2% to 7.5%, 8.5%. Just looked at one the other day, about fell on my chair. It was at 12.
Oh.
And these are million-dollar notes. So the question is, does a Fed have to do that? And it's killing the small business owners because they're carrying an SBA note that they got – you know, at 2% back in the day, but it keeps creeping
up.
Is it
adjustable, I guess?
Yeah. It's a variable rate, so it goes with whatever the market is.
Yikes.
So if rates go higher, you may see some failures in a sense because it can't make that payment to the SBA.
And a 1%, when you're talking about big numbers like that.
Well, especially if it's a $3 or $4 million note.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking going from $5,000 a month payment to an $18,000 a month payment. You go, yeeks. That does hit your bottom line heavy. So.
Oh, my gosh. So that's the latest when it comes to the rates. And just watch this space. We normally get every couple of weeks another good look at what might be going on. So it is Keep What's Yours with Jeff Zufall. We do talk about what's going on in the news. We talk about the economy. We talk about inflation. But we also talk about you. And if you're a small business owner, May is Small Business Month. And we're going to be talking about it all month, but we're also going to be talking about it in the next segment.
Yes.
So stay tuned. What happens if you have a home office? What can you do? Self-employment tax, how does that work? If you're a small business owner, new one, or you've been doing it for 30 years, you're going to want to listen because we've got some information for you. It is Keep What's Yours with Jeff Zufall, 636-394-5524, Capital Advisory Group, capitaladvisorygrp.com.
Keep What's Yours continues with Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zufall.
Back on the show, back to Keep What's Yours, trying to help you figure out how to keep more of your money in your pocket rather than going out in the form of taxes, and it's all legal. And if someone's advising you, Jeff, of doing something, that's not legal. We like to remind everybody there's legal ways.
There are legal ways to do it that you lower your tax bill. In trouble. Yeah. And then there's other ways that we've seen, and I won't name names, that had six LLCs and tried playing a shell game. I'm like, no, you won't get away with that.
Let me ask you this. This is just between you and me.
Mm-hmm.
Are you required to call the FBI when you see stuff like that?
Technically, due diligence, we're not supposed to do a return mm-hmm. because we'd be held responsible,
yeah, right.
Knowing that if it was fraud. As far as calling the IRS, I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah.
Never have yet.
Right.
I've seen some stuff and refused to do it.
It's like, hey, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, and sent them down the road. I don't know who ended up doing it. But we've seen some stuff that they took. There's certain people, too, that we got to watch. We call them hoppers that will go accountant to accountant to accountant each year, and they come up with crazy stuff. And then each year they will change accountants and they're like, oh, well, that guy, you know, he did me wrong, that type of a deal. And all they're trying to do is see what they can get away with.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And that's another show for another
day. Oh, yeah.
Hold. We should do
what
that.
What not to do.
And when's the slow time of year? Let's do that show then. But May is Small Business Month, so let's talk small businesses. And a couple of things that have come up throughout the years is the question of my home office. And especially
yes.
during the pandemic, my wife worked from home.
Yeah.
I had to come into the station every day. I was fine with it. It was nice. It was quaint. You know, all the sales staff were at home. And it was just the honor.
It's kind of nice because there's no traffic on the road.
No traffic. It was fine. It was great. It is what it is. But my wife was working from home. The question that would come up, and I'm sure you saw constantly, was, well, I work from home full time now.
Yeah.
Can I claim my house?
No.
I wasn't
if you if you're a W-2 employee, you cannot write off your home office.
If you work for someone else,
mm-hmm.
but you happen to work from home,
yes,
you can't claim your home office.
Cannot claim your home office
on your
taxes. Even though you're there, hopefully they help offset or reimburse for your internet, you know, some other little perks here and there.
And they did. I mean, I think cell phone was paid for.
Yeah, cell phone, stuff. Different stuff like that. But again, if you have a small business, and I say small business, this could be just a sole proprietor, an LLC, partnership, all the way up to an S-corp or a corporation. Office in the home deduction, if your primary place of business is being ran out of your home. A lot of people are like, oh, no, that's a flag for the IRS to audit me. No, it's not. It's all part of the real deal deductions. You just can't get crazy on it. And what they actually do is they'll say, hey, you take the total square footage of your home.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that just for the sake of conversation, keep the math easy. It's a 1,000-square-foot house.
Sure.
You go and pick a bedroom, and it's 10 by 10. That's 100 square feet. That is 10% of your total square footage of your home.
Mm-hmm.
Then basically all of your utilities, if you can't itemize, you can take your mortgage interest and move that over. Your insurance for your house, even to the degree of repairs and maintenance, you know, landscapers, all kinds of stuff like that. House cleaners, that is all part of the function of that office in the home. And you get the deducted. It's only,
10%.
Hypothetically 10%. But say it's $6,000-$7,000, there's a couple hundred bucks easy that you get to take the deduction.
I say all the time on this show, 10%, you know, oh, is it even worth the squeeze? That's $600.
Sure it is.
Is exactly. $600 worth the squeeze to
yes.
you? It is to me.
Yeah. Now here's the funny part is there's people who say, oh, I have this entity, and I'll call it that. And I have my office in my home, but I really didn't make a lot of money. I made $100 this year. But they have $10,000 worth of deductions, it's a push. So it's still the square footage calculation, but it's a carry forward. You can't take the deduction unless you have income.
Okay.
So if you even record it, so there's some businesses that get up off the ground, have a couple $100 going. It's the early stages of the business, and it's part-time. They'd be able to take that deduction, but that home office expense will just be stuck out there until they have income, and then you start to get the deduction.
So there are rules to it. Yes. It is a thing. You can deduct home
office.
It's
a real deal. Yeah.
But you have to be a home-based business, a small business owner, self-employed.
It has to be your primary. Even if you had another location, but you could prove that you did billing or you did some type of research in your home office and that was your predominant place of business, then you can still take that deduction.
Very interesting. I'm writing these things down right now. My sister owns a business.
Exactly.
It's not her main employment.
Doesn't matter.
I'm going to text her after the show.
So if she has like a W-2 from somebody, but yet she has the side businesses going, the office in the home, that's a deduction, and it's completely legit. Now, the other thing you can do is part of it is you depreciate a piece of your home, okay? So you would key in total value of the home, what you're using, square footages as the business, and you take depreciation also on that going forward.
Mm. Now, is this something where, you know, I'm always trying to find I'm the one that's probably going to get audited someday. Trying to find the wiggle room, quick buck here or there. What if, I work in the basement. And, yes, I'm just in a corner of the basement, but the whole basement's one big room.
No, you cordon off. It's got to be reasonable. So, again, now.
Honey, why don't you work in the master bedrooms, the biggest room in the house?
Exactly. Now, what if you had a construction company and you had storage? So you had material, equipment that you've got to store someplace.
You can count that.
You would then take maybe part of a garage. It's got to, and again, at the end of the day, it's got to be reasonable. If you have a 2,000-square-foot home, you can't say, hey, my office is 1,000 square feet because I got the whole basement. Mm-hmm. Doesn't count that way.
Have you tried to keep people honest and say, look, Jerry.
Yes.
This clearly is your basement.
I've seen both sides of the coin. I've seen it where somebody is saying, hey, the whole basement's my office. And I'm like, okay, that's great, but don't take the deduction. You're asking for trouble.
Right.
And I've also seen the reverse. They're like, hey, I work out of a coat closet. I took 27 square feet. They're like, well, your office got to be bigger than 27 square feet.
Right.
So really, I think it was supposed to be 270 and somebody missed the zero. Because he laughed at it when I said, last year you had 27 square foot office. And they're like, really? So, and I'm like, that's what it says. So, no, that's almost impossible. I won't say it's impossible. New York, I'd say, yeah, okay, that's probably real.
Home in
yeah,
New York.
But here in the Midwest, no.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. And then again, mileage. So a lot of people forget about that. If you have a small business, You can't say, oh, I am going. You hypothetically have to, any business traveling that you do by car or truck, basically you get 68 and a half cents for it. But what I see is people going, hey, I want to write off my car and I'm going to take mileage. It's one or the other. And whatever method that you start with, you're stuck with for the life of that vehicle.
Oh, really?
So if you take mileage, you just run with the mileage.
I can't switch it up at the year.
Can't switch up middle. Now, you could sell that vehicle, replace it with something else.
And then switch.
And then switch and maybe take, depending upon what you do, maybe take, mileage deduction, maybe take where you would actually take a deduction for the vehicle over a period of time. But the vehicle has to be used 100% for business use.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't go, hey, I'm going to write off my, buy an F-250 truck, and then I'm going to say, oh, it's all 100% business, but yet I drive it personally everywhere.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Take your wife out to dinner in it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you're not supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But again, that's kind of that big picture. But, just the office and the home is not a scary thing. It really isn't. It's mainstream. That's where you're working from. Take it and run.
So if you're a W-2 employee, you work for someone else, but you do all your work from home, there's probably other things those people can do.
Not much.
But
you would think after COVID, where everybody was forced to work from home, slowly just now people are being forced to go back to the office. So we're in 2024. That's, 4 years later, 3.5 years later, you would think that they would put a provision in the tax law to go, hey, if you worked from your home, you get this or that. But the normal employee gets nothing.
How about this? Why don't you reach out to your employer and say, hey, why don't you buck up for my internet?
Exactly. Pay my internet, cell phone.
Buy me a monitor, maybe a nicer desk.
Exactly.
give me something, give me a stipend or something here if I'm working from home full time. But if you're a home-based business, small business owner, self-employed, you can take the square footage of your home office and you know, run it by Jeff first to make sure it's all on the up and up. But you can do that. Now, before we go to break, self-employment taxes. Now, we've talked about this before as well. I, as an employee, I pay, you know, for Social Security, my health care. And
Medicare. Your two primaries are Social Security and Medicare.
Medicare. Not my health care now, but my health care.
Later.
So I pay that, and it, what does it rattle off to?
So you pay 6.2% to Social Security.
6.2.
And 1.45% to Medicare.
Okay.
And no way out of it. You pay that straight out. The employer, or Mr. Dorsey, then matches that dollar for dollar on his side.
I, in all of my years as an employee, whether at this location or other place, I had no idea that the employer matched that.
I thought
that was it.
No, that's it. So it comes out to be 15.3% total.
And that's payroll taxes.
That's payroll taxes. So a lot of companies, they say, hey, when they move into some place, they get all these tax abatements. They don't pay income tax, but they pay payroll tax and pay a lot of it. But again, that's going to Medicare and Social Security. Okay, so if you are self-employed and you are a sole proprietor, an LLC, partnerships, literally what's going to take place is, remember, and a lot of people forget about this, your earnings, your profit, will you will pay a self-employment tax on it. And it's 15.3% of whatever your profit is. So if you made $100,000, people are like, oh, I should only owe, you know, $10,000. No, you're not at a 10% tax bracket because you got self-employment tax of 15.3. So you owe $15,300 self-employment alone, plus federal tax, plus state tax. And it adds up fast.
And if you're like me and you're a dullard and you just don't know this, you start a small business and all of a sudden.
That's where most people.
I'm paying 16% in taxes.
Yeah, most people just panic when we show them that at the end of the year. And it's like, well, how do you figure? Why am I paying so much in tax? Because that's if you were working, you'd only pay the 6.2 and the 1.45.
Your boss would foot the bill.
They would match the other half. But since it's you're the owner slash employee, you pay 15.3.
So they want 16% no matter what.
Yes.
And
plus whatever your state tax level is and your federal tax level. So the flip of that is then people, once you start getting some revenue going, you go, hey, do I go to a corporation or do I go to what's called an S-corp? Corporation basically means anything within that corporation from a profit is taxable to the corporation. So it's a double tax, honestly. You could take it in payroll, but again, you're going to be paying the 15.3 plus federal and state.
Yeah.
And then the trick of it is an S-corp. It could be an LLC, could be a corporation. An S-corp is a designation that you ask for them from the IRS and say, I want to be taxed as a as an S-corp, and all it is a pass-through, which means part is W-2'd income where you still pay that 15.3, but the other part is actually an owner's distribution.
Well, let's do that in the next segment. Let's talk about the different types of companies and distinctions that you can code, the LLC, the sole proprietor, the S-corp, the corporate. What do these all mean? We'll try to break it down, but it is Small Business Month. May is Small Business Month. And Jeff, I haven't mentioned this a lot in the past year because we have been talking about tax time. We have been talking about personal taxes, filing your taxes, making sure that you pay something or else you're going to get dinged, a tax on top of a tax. Who wants to pay taxes on top of taxes?
Nobody.
But Jeff is an expert when it comes to small business. That is his specialty. If you have a small business, he can help you out, and we're going to be talking small business all month long. 636-394-5524, 636-394-5524. Capital Advisory Group is where Jeff is at. He is the Senior Tax Strategist and Wealth Advisor at Capital Advisory Group, and you can find them online, capitaladvisorygrp.com. Keep what's yours. What are the different types of companies when you start your company that you get to choose from, and what are the differences and what do they all mean? We'll talk about that in the next segment. It is Keep What's Yours with Jeff Zufall on the Big 550 KTRA.
Keep What's Yours continues with Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zufall.
Back on the show, Jeff Zufall, Senior Tax Strategist, Wealth Advisor, Capital Advisory Group. It's Small Business Month. May is Small Business Month, and we want to talk about it. But when I go to start up my small business, whether it be sole proprietor, LLC, partnership, corporation, yes, what are the differences, and how many of them are there?
I guess there's, what, six different variations?
And what are the differences? Are they based solely upon how much revenue I bring in or how many employees I have?
Yes, but no. I mean, and some are from a revenue standpoint. Typically, when you do your registration for what type of business you are, it's really a legal liability scenario. And what you're trying to do is create a corporate veil so that your business or your company is safe from your personal assets. Okay. And that's really what you're doing it for.
Now, I've got experience with you. We've got an LLC, and that would just mean that if someone were to sue the LLC, they can't necessarily take my personal house.
Hypothetically. Exactly. If it's pure negligence, anything's game.
Right.
But
sure.
But typically, you create these entities so that it's carved off. It's, and they can't get to your personal assets, is the theory. So the first, which is the easiest, is a sole proprietor. Sole proprietor basically is just you doing a side gig, Uber drivers, all kinds of people. Way back in the day, like 1988, 89, I was a sole proprietor. It just plops on your personal return, and you say, hey, I made $2,000. I got some expenses. Whatever your net is, boom, you're done. Okay?
I'm currently looking at you wondering what your haircut looked like in 1988.
Very slick. No.
You get the mullet in the back.
Mullet going.
Yeah.
I had a ponytail. No. So that's the easiest way. And again, for a sole proprietor, you could run it out of your personal bank account. It doesn't have to have a it makes it easier, but it doesn't have to have a separate bank account. So you could intermix it, slur it with your W-2 income. It just at the end of the year, you got to be able to say, here's income, here's expenses, here's my gain or loss. Boom, done.
And that,
super simple.
Would you say that's the easiest one? That's the first step. That's the
That's the easiest. That's where people typically start. You really don't need any registration for it. It's just
I'm mowing lawns around the neighborhood.
I got a business
in my spare time.
No tax ID numbers. Nothing. Yeah. Okay. And then we see people that just don't ever adjust that over time. And it's like, whoa, you made $1 million. You know, you might want to rethink that. And again,
would it be more beneficial to them?
Yes.
To rethink it?
Rethink it from a liability standpoint, because sole proprietor is basically the tax returns, your personal tax return. It's you.
Somebody's got to agree with my lawn mowing. They can sue me.
So if you ran over the neighbor with your lawnmower, you could get sued. And when they sue you, not only from a business aspect, from a personal asset in the same time.
Jeff, it would ruin me.
It would.
Yeah.
I mean, and it could be something stupid that you never thought of that sneaks up behind you and gets you. And like we were joking about, you know, you don't want to be the dioxin hauling guy and be a sole proprietor, because when you get sued, they're coming after you business and personally at a later date. So but it's the easiest one to function with. And then the next would be an LLC, a limited liability corporation. You're basically just creating an entity with the state. You could typically get a tax ID number with it, and then that steps into that business aspect in a sense, and it could be a small LLC. Again, once you get into a sole proprietor, an LLC, literally you pay the 15.3% self-employment tax. You're going to pay the full boat. Because sole proprietor and an LLC, you really can't take a paycheck per se, where you're going to have federal tax and all that stuff withheld. It's owner's draw is what it really is. And then your third would be a partnership, which is we see a lot of people, husband and wife, venture down this path. They go to create their LLC, but it's husband and wife 50-50, and then technically that's a partnership. So you have to file a separate, what's called a 1065 tax return, which is a partnership return, which then kicks off K-1s back to your personal level. But again, that gives you that next level of liability protection. Then you get into your corporations, a true corporation. And then an S corporation. So a true corporate, a C corp is what it's referred to, is Home Depot, you know, Lowe's, all the companies like that. They're corporations. The concept is it's a double taxation because any profits, the company pays the tax. So typically a C corp used to be the in style. It still has its perks today. And then there's what's called an S corp. An S corp, people think, oh, I got to revamp everything to do this S corp. An S corp is where you just go to the IRS and you say, I want to be taxed as an S corporation. You could be an LLC, you could be a corporation. You don't have to change anything. All your tax ID numbers, bank accounts, everything stays the same. And it's a pass-through, which means part of your earnings that you make are W-2'd, and any profit at the end of the year passes through as an owner's distribution, not subject to the 15.3 self-employment tax. And everybody's now thinking, man, I want to be an S-corp because I'm going to say that I make $1,000 a year in payroll and everything else comes through as owner's draw. Don't go down that path. In an S-corp, IRS gets that, and they say reasonable compensation, which says, let's say that you own a construction company, and you're an S-corp, and you say, well, the IRS will look at it this way. They'll say, what would it take if you moved to Florida and you have nothing to do with this company today? What would it take for you to pay somebody to run the day-in, day-out operations of this company?
Gotcha.
And so, it could be $300,000 a year, and that's what reasonable compensation
so
is.
So that you can't say, well, as the owner of this company, I pay myself $12
exactly
a year.
And that's my W-2 income. The rest comes through under owner's draw that you bypass 15.3%. I mean, the good side of it is, yeah, you don't have to pay the tax. The bad side of it is two things. One, you're not paying into the system, and not that you're affecting anybody but yourself also, which means at a later date when you show up to get Social Security, if you kept that at a low amount, you're not paying in that much to the system, you won't get as much in Social Security.
You'll get $12 a month back.
Yeah, exactly.
So, there's so many different ways to go about doing it, but when we talk Small Business Month, what are most small businesses falling into?
Most of them fall into a sole proprietor or an LLC, honestly. That's what we see the most. And then we explain, hey, you're a sole proprietor, but like I said, you got $1 million of revenue. Why in the world do you have this on your personal return?
Mm-hmm.
And then you move it over to an S corp, or in some cases a C corp, depending upon what they do. And there's perks for each one to get real technical. But again, at the end of the day, the bulk go to S corps. And then that way they get the liability protection, and then they can kind of adjust their payroll, if you want to say that.
And is it something where, you know, somebody's got a bunch of rental properties and they want to make sure that, if one goes down, they can't bring the other ones with them?
LLCs, multiple LLCs.
Got 10 rental properties, that I got 10 LLCs.
Hypothetically. And then some people, you'll do it to where they all feed up to a master LLC, and then that feeds to your tax return. Not that it's a shell game by no means. It's the flow of how the dollars run.
So what would you, and we talk about these big corporations that have, you know, entire buildings devoted to their tax people,
sure,
their tax preparers and their lawyers and all that stuff. What would you say GE is? Because GE famously doesn't pay taxes.
Yeah, they're a corporation, but they fall in a
hole. I think they got a tax return 1 year, which doesn't make any sense.
Makes no sense, but typically corporations have enough write-offs, and they have a different – I mean, you get over $25 million worth of revenue, you step into the next category, and it just goes
from there. And is that beneficial for the corporation?
Sure it is. I mean, for the corporation as a whole, it is. Yeah. If you looked at it from what do they generate to society? Again, they don't pay income tax, but they pay payroll tax. They pay that 15.3, or at least half of it, for the people that they employ.
Mm-hmm. So, and being an LLC or being a corporation or whatever, you know, if GE got sued for whatever reason, they're not suing the CEO of the company.
It depends.
Yeah.
Depends on if it's financial. He signs off on the document, and yes, he is personally liable.
Oh,
at the
really?
End of the day. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I know with that opioid crisis, they went after the family.
Sure, because those guys signed financial documents for the corporation, and at the end of the day, it turned out it was fraud. So, boom, they got them.
Okay. So no one did jail time.
Well, that's a whole – that's buying the right attorneys.
Yeah, frankly, they got a sweetheart deal. They paid billions of dollars. But yeah.
And still, I think the family still got left with – I forget what it was.
$5 billion
apiece or something goofy like that. But
yeah, they're still fine.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't miss a meal.
So it's all about how you declare yourself, and when you want to start a small business and you need some advice – call Jeff, 636-394-5524, capitaladvisory@grp.com. Full disclosure, we did an LLC. I consulted with Jeff, and Jeff said, let's do an LLC, and you should be pretty good to go.
Yes.
So that's kind of how it works. And if you're doing a small business and you need some advice, 636-394-5524. May is Small Business Month. We'll be talking about it all month long.
Yes.
And Jeff, thank you so much. If anybody has any questions about small businesses, personal taxes, business taxes, they can give you a call. CapitalAdvisoryGRP.com is the website and the phone number. Again, one more time, 636-394-5524. Thank you so much, Jeff Zufall, Senior Tax Strategist and Wealth Advisor with Capital Advisory Group. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
You've been listening to Keep What's Yours with Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zufall, Senior Tax Strategist and Wealth Manager at Capital Advisory Group. To learn more, call 636-394-5524 or visit CapitalAdvisoryGRP.com. The views and opinions expressed in the preceding paid pre-recorded program are those of the host, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of this station, its management, or owners.